Xerox Park. The Xerox Corporation's Palo Alto Research Center, known as Xerox Park, had been established in 1970 to create a spawning ground for digital ideas. It was safely located, for better and for worse, 3,000 miles from the commercial pressures of Xerox corporate headquarters in Connecticut. Among its visionaries was the scientist Alan Kay, who had two great maxims that Jobs embraced. The best way to predict the future is to invent it. And people who are serious about software should make their own hardware. Kay pushed the vision of a small personal computer, dubbed the Dynabook, that would be easy enough for children to use. So Xerox Park's engineers began to develop user-friendly graphics that could replace all of the command lines and DOS prompts that made computer screens intimidating. The metaphor they came up with was that of a desktop. The screen could have many documents and folders on it, and you could use a mouse to point and click on the one you wanted to use. This graphical user interface, or GUI, pronounced GUI, was facilitated by another concept pioneered at Xerox Park, bitmapping. Until then, most computers were character-based. You would type a character on a keyboard, and the computer would generate that character on the screen, usually in glowing greenish phosphor against a dark background. Since there were a limited number of letters, numerals, and symbols, it didn't take a whole lot of computer code or processing power to accomplish this. In a bitmap system, on the other hand, each and every pixel on the screen is controlled by bits in the computer's memory. To render something on the screen, such as a letter, the computer has to tell each pixel to be light or dark, or in the case of color displays, what color to be. This uses a lot of computing power, but it permits gorgeous graphics, fonts, and gee-whiz screen displays. Bitmapping and graphical interfaces became features of Xerox Park's prototype computers, such as the Alto and its object-oriented programming language, Smalltalk. Jeff Raskin decided that these features were the future of computing, so he began urging Jobs and other Apple colleagues to go check out Xerox Park. Raskin had one problem. Jobs regarded him as an insufferable theorist, or to use Jobs' own more precise terminology, a shithead who sucks. So Raskin enlisted his friend Atkinson, who fell on the other side of Jobs' shithead-slash-genius division of the world, to convince Jobs to take an interest in what was happening at Xerox Park. What Raskin didn't know was that Jobs was working on a more complex deal. Xerox's venture capital division wanted to be part of the second round of Apple financing during the summer of 1979. Jobs made an offer. "I will let you invest $1 million in Apple if you will open the kimono at Park." Xerox accepted. It agreed to show Apple its new technology and in return got to buy 100,000 shares at about $10 each. By the time Apple went public a year later, Xerox's $1 million worth of shares were worth $17.6 million. But Apple got the better end of the bargain. Jobs and his colleagues went to see Xerox Park's technology in December 1979, and when Jobs realized he hadn't been shown enough, got an even fuller demonstration a few days later. Larry Tesler was one of the Xerox scientists called upon to do the briefings, and he was thrilled to show off the work that his bosses back east had never seemed to appreciate. But the other briefer, Adele Goldberg, was appalled that her company seemed willing to give away its crown jewels. "It was incredibly stupid, completely nuts, and I fought to prevent giving Jobs much of anything," she recalled. Goldberg got her way at the first briefing. Jobs, Raskin, and the Lisa team leader, John Couch, were ushered into the main lobby where a Xerox Alto had been set up. It was a very controlled show of a few applications, primarily a word processing one, Goldberg said. Jobs wasn't satisfied, and he called Xerox headquarters demanding more. So he was invited back a few days later, and this time he brought a larger team that included Bill Atkinson and Bruce Horn, an Apple programmer who had worked at Xerox PARC. They both knew what to look for. When I arrived at work, there was a lot of commotion, and I was told that Jobs and a bunch of his programmers were in the conference room, said Goldberg. One of her engineers was trying to keep them entertained with more displays of the word processing program, but Jobs was growing impatient. "Let's stop this bullshit," he kept shouting. So the Xerox folks huddled privately and decided to open the kimono a bit more, but only slowly. They agreed that Tesler could show off Smalltalk, the programming language, but he would demonstrate only what was known as the unclassified version. It will dazzle Jobs, and he'll never know he didn't get the confidential disclosure, the head of the team told Goldberg. They were wrong. Atkinson and others had read some of the papers published by Xerox PARC, so they knew they were not getting a full description. Jobs phoned the head of the Xerox Venture Capital Division to complain. A call immediately came back from corporate headquarters in Connecticut, decreeing that Jobs and his group should be shown everything. Goldberg stormed out in a rage. When Tesler finally showed them what was truly under the hood, the Apple folks were astonished. Atkinson stared at the screen, examining each pixel so closely that Tesler could feel the breath on his neck. Jobs bounced around and waved his arms excitedly. He was hopping around so much I don't know how he actually saw most of the demo, but he did because he kept asking questions, Tesler recalled. He was the exclamation point for every step I showed. Jobs kept saying that he couldn't believe that Xerox had not commercialized the technology. "You're sitting on a gold mine," he shouted. "I can't believe Xerox is not taking advantage of this." The Smalltalk demonstration showed three amazing features. One was how computers could be networked. The second was how object-oriented programming worked. But Jobs and his team paid little attention to these attributes because they were so amazed by the third feature, the graphical interface that was made possible by a bitmapped screen. "It was like a veil being lifted from my eyes," Jobs recalled. "I could see what the future of computing was destined to be." When the Xerox PARC meeting ended after more than 2 hours, Jobs drove Bill Atkinson back to the Apple office in Cupertino. He was speeding, and so were his mind and mouth. "This is it," he shouted, emphasizing each word. "We've got to do it." It was the breakthrough he had been looking for, bringing computers to the people with the cheerful but affordable design of an Eichler home and the ease of use of a sleek kitchen appliance. "How long would this take to implement?" he asked. "I'm not sure," Atkinson replied. "Maybe 6 months?" It was a wildly optimistic assessment, but also a motivating one.